So the reason HTTPS makes sense as an analogy is because before HTTPS, everything on the web was totally unencrypted. And if you and I were having this video call and say we were both on hotel, say I was on hotel Wi-Fi, the hotel is a sort of third party in the middle that would be able to listen in on the stream and find all the packets. Once we introduced HTTPS, not that streaming was that easy back in the day, maybe it was emails instead, but assume it was. Once we assumed HTTPS, then the ability of the third parties that are not us, the counterparties, to read that information was fixed. It was protected by encryption. PayJoin is much the same in that when I'm sending you some money with a PayJoin, you still know my inputs and I still know your address ultimately at the end of the transaction on chain. But without that information of my wallet or your wallet, without those additional details, the second party information, third parties don't know that with any certainty.
Dan, welcome.
Sean, thank you.
Fresh out of the Department of Motor Vehicles, on to Trust Revolution. Appreciate you making that context switch. Hopefully it's a little more pleasurable doing this than that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't want to be standing in lines and talking through a glass wall.
Nobody needs that. We're just talking through glass screens instead. Well, hey, so we have been working on this for a bit since you and I sat beside each other at an event at Bitcoin Park and started talking about our beloved First and Fourth Amendments here in the United States. And so I am particularly excited to talk with you, to speak with you about your work, about what privacy means in terms of financial transactions and payments specifically. And let's start here. Congratulations on getting PayJoin Foundation off the ground. And for those who may not be familiar with the work and your leadership of it, could you give us a brief background, Dan, on PayJoin and PayJoin Foundation and its relevance to Bitcoin and payments generally?
Sure. Thanks for that tee up. I need to also thank my team, of course.
Absolutely.
The whole reason PayJoin and PayJoin Foundation exists now is because we've had around 8 independent compensated contributors working on PayJoin for about a year. And we've got a volunteer board. It was time to be able to recruit directly for specific needs that the PayJoin dev kit had. But I'm getting ahead of myself. So PayJoin is what you can think of as interactive batching. Bitcoin has had batching since, you know, it became widespread in 2017, I think, when the fees got crazy. But if you make naive Bitcoin transactions, that's one transaction per transfer of money. And if you're moving money often and in high volumes, that starts to really add up and become more expensive than it needs to be. So when the fees got high in 2017, people started batching non-interactively, where like the common example is an exchange would service multiple withdrawals in one transaction where they'd provide a single input and be able to pay, say, 100 people all in one transaction, only producing one change, which kept their wallets small, kept their customers served often, and they pay a much smaller fee for making that batch versus making the 100 separate transactions.
And that is, if I am a customer of Strike or Cash App or one of the more sort of consumer-focused apps of that nature, I want to sweep my Bitcoin, I want to move it into self-custody, whatever that may look like, what you're laying out is sort of the operating process that these exchanges go through whereby they're not having all their margin eaten up by fees and they can process these withdrawals more frequently so that, as you say, I, as a customer, a consumer, get what I want when I want it.
That's right. Exactly.
And then if I am, again, that individual who, you know, maybe I'm holding IBIT, I want some, as they say, exposure to Bitcoin, but I'm not yet holding Bitcoin in self-custody, or I am, as I noted, a Strike or a Cash App user, really looking at it more as a neobank with an eye toward how do I enjoy sort of the full benefit or set of benefits of Bitcoin. rewind and explain why any of what you just described sort of matters in that context. What ultimately does PayJoin get us or get that individual? What's the benefit?
So in the context of self-custody, this is what you're talking about as opposed to an IBIT or some ETF?
Well, if I more that I'm that person who is looking to take the next step into self-custody or just progressing, you know, toward using Bitcoin to its fullest extent, what is PayJoin? What's the impact of PayJoin on that individual?
So easy. Bitcoin exists to remove intermediaries from the movement of money online. So you want to be able to move money and you don't want to be censored by some party in the middle that says, no, you can't do that because I don't like that. In order to do that, we need privacy, because without privacy, if someone can see how money is moving, they don't like someone you paid. If you're relying on them to move money, or even if they can make a lot of noise that you move some money, then they can discriminate based on that. So we need some baseline privacy. And in the original white paper, Satoshi said that there's privacy problems with Bitcoin, and that the way Bitcoin works with inputs like coins and outputs for each transaction, he said all the inputs necessarily come from the same person, which at the time was true based on the wallet software available, but it wasn't a consensus constraint. And that assumption that all the inputs come from one person is called the multi-input heuristic or the common input ownership heuristic, and is used to dragnet surveil everyone on Bitcoin. It's a pretty easy assumption to make that all the inputs come from the same person. So you can just look at the chain and kind of follow coins from A to B, see how much money someone has, how much money they make on a regular basis, who they paid in the past, and then in the future, even who they might pay. So PayJoin is the simplest way to break that privacy problem that Satoshi brought up. And I think of it as the next iteration of batching. So the batching I mentioned is non-interactive batching.
Right.
With PayJoin, you have interactive batching, where rather than the batch being made just by the person with the inputs, you can have a sender and a receiver both contribute inputs to a transaction. So this breaks the heuristic and it saves people money. It's supercharged batching for Bitcoin.
Right. And I think that's you know, exactly what I wanted to convey, is that the, in my mind, significant innovation here is that privacy becomes an economic benefit, not a liability. And so, as you just teed it up, Dan, I'd like to go from there to, let's do talk Fourth Amendment. And so the Fourth Amendment says your papers and effects can't be searched without a warrant. We use physical cash. That protection exists. When we use Bitcoin, as you eloquently noted, so-called chain analysis tracks every transaction. How, in your mind, did we end up with less privacy in the digital version of cash than the physical one?
I love this question because it's kind of like history rhyming, actually. The same sort of thing happened when the telephone was invented. So, you know, we or even the telegraph before that, we had all these wires on the ground, people using Morse code, but they passed laws very quickly that made physical taps the arbitrary. Like if you physically spliced a wire into the phone cable to spy on someone, that was illegal. But then someone figured out, oh, you can just wrap a wire, a coil around the wire. You're not physically tapping it, and you can read the signal still. And it took until the mid-60s to pass laws that made that Fourth Amendment protected, that required police departments and government agents to get warrants to be able to search and seize that information. So how did we get here where it's not protected by the Fourth Amendment? I think it's just new ground. People aren't aware. There was also a sort of a necessity when Bitcoin originally came out. We didn't have zero-knowledge proofs, so we weren't able to do that kind of verification without all the amounts being available in this public record. So it's part of, it's partly just that the laws and norms take time to catch up, and some technological limitations at the time that Bitcoin came out. But all of these things, I believe, are being addressed.
And and that is certainly another point that I want to underscore, is this is the preservation of rights. This is not the assertion of new rights. And so you touched on it. You know, a government agency wants transaction data in the physical world, get a warrant. And so the question with Bitcoin is, you know, why does that standard disappear? And not, Dan, that I expect you to be to act as an historian, but I know that you, by necessity, as a builder of PayJoin, get into this, is, you know, what's your sort of understanding as it stands with regard to the so-called reasonable expectation of privacy? And I'm thinking about, you know, Katz versus United States in the 60s, I think it was. And so what is your assessment or understanding of how Bitcoin sits in that sort of that rubric of reasonable expectation of privacy, and where is PayJoin pushing us or taking us?
So yes, Katz is sort of what I was talking about, where you have a reasonable expectation of privacy. I think the issue with Bitcoin is specifically that while the system is pseudonymous and has the potential to grant people the ability to preserve their privacy, in practice, everything people do is published to a permanent record on chain, as, like I said, noted by Satoshi. And even before that, if people reuse addresses, if people are relying on a third party to sync,
third party doctrine kicks in.
Well, yeah, not even that. But if you're beyond the legal part, just the strict practicality, if you're depending on someone else to tell you what your balance is and you're not validating, you're revealing your entire history to someone else,
right,
that you must trust not to reveal that. Never mind if someone goes and knocks on their door and says, give this over because you're a third party and third party doctrine applies, so we don't need to get a warrant.
Right, right. Well, and maybe to contrast that, you know, for those paying attention this week, Samurai, the Wasabi, or pardon me, Samurai Mixer, that litigation has come to a head where the government has shown that they're taking a particularly aggressive stance. Prosecutors have claimed that Samurai pooled funds and operated as a so-called financial intermediary, and they're pushing for the maximum sentence of 5 years. How does PayJoin's architecture differ from mixing technically? And to the degree you want to go there, you know, sort of why does that matter in light of some of these lawsuits and some of these, I would say, witch hunts?
Yeah, it's a shame to see the way that's gone. That whole case is a disaster for so many reasons.
It absolutely is.
The biggest one is just that they pled to the money service business charge and not some of the other charges, which seemed like the most ludicrous of what was on the table. The whole point of PayJoin is that it happens while you're making a payment. Like I said, it's transaction batching generally rather than some form of mixing.
Right. It's in the flow, in the process of executing or conducting a payment. It is not a discrete, separate activity. Is that fair?
Even if it were, which it's not, I don't think that activity makes it more suspicious, but it definitely makes it less convenient. So PayJoin, it's got two things that really make it quite different from your classic coordinated CoinJoin. One is that it happens in the typical user experience. So you scan a QR code like you would, you're trying to pay someone, you click send, and in the background, if both wallets support it, it'll try to make a batch based on the configuration of each wallet. And therefore, it doesn't require an explicit like user action. I'm trying to mix and separate old history from new history. But it also tends not to have this distinguishable fingerprint on chain. When you look at a coin join from a Samurai or a Wasabi, you're going to see a lot of outputs that are of equal amounts. And when money is being transferred, whether in a batch or not, it wouldn't usually look that way. That would only happen if you're doing a self-spend. Because PayJoin both involves a transfer and only involves two people, mainly because it involves a transfer, it doesn't have this signature. You don't produce equal amount outputs. It produces typically a transaction that has two outputs, which 80% of the transactions on the network have two inputs, I meant to say, not outputs, have two inputs. So it looks like everything else on the chain. It's not really possible for someone to point at something and say with any degree of certainty that is a pay join. It looks like the rest of the traffic on the network. So it's much harder for a third party or even a second party to a transaction to discriminate based on history that includes pay join activity, just because you don't know for certain if it's happening.
Right. Right, right. And if I am then, if we shift from a user of money, of Bitcoin, to a developer, what is the benefit or why should I integrate PayJoin rather than avoiding privacy features altogether in light of Samurai and other scenarios? Sort of what's the call to action to a developer to build PayJoin into their wallet, into their consumer experience?
Yeah, if you're avoiding privacy features altogether, I'm not sure exactly what that means. Does that mean you're custodying your users' funds and that's it? You don't go any further than that. You give people, like, if you want to give people control because it's a benefit to them and a selling point for you, then privacy is just another knob. You're
Absolutely.
Giving people the control to reveal their activity or not. And it may even make your life easier because you don't need to manage any sort of personal data, take responsibility for that. But beyond that, I think the reason to integrate PayJoin now is because it gives this opportunity to your users to do these automated batches that fall back to the old way of doing things. So it's optimistic and it's not going to break your flow. And not only do your users benefit with this idea of privacy, but the whole network stands to benefit as the floor upgrades, as this basic common input heuristic becomes less reliable for all. So if I were to send you money, Sean, you might know some details about what I sent to you and vice versa, but our ability to cluster one another to know, oh, all of these coins belong to Sean, these are the people he transacts with in this amount, becomes much less reliable. And that improves everyone's safety. And in my opinion, the longevity of the whole network, the selling point of Bitcoin is that it is censorship resistant. And this element of privacy is necessary to preserve that.
Yes. And I think that cannot be overemphasized, is this is delivering on the promise, I think, of what so many expect from Bitcoin, whether or not they understand deeply the technical details. And, you know, as you called out, there were caveats that Satoshi made note of. But peer-to-peer electronic cash is what I hope most people expect of it. And I think what's so exciting about PayJoin is pushing, you know, closer to that vision. And my monologue here is only to say that there are not dedicated business models and firms that I'm aware of that are, you know, spying on me moving cash from point A to point B across a counter or to another individual. And so why should they enjoy that particular benefit or business model with Bitcoin?
Beyond
so
that, I think,
please.
There's one thing I want to touch on with regard to why the time is now. The PayJoin dev kit is the tool that lets developers plug this into their wallet experience. And until now, if you wanted to have one of these privacy technologies in your wallet or your service, I mean, really, if you have an exchange or a custodian or a treasury or a payment processor, that's all viable. You have a lending product. Now the PayJoin dev kit, in about 1,000 lines of code with two developers in a weekend, you can plug it into that existing flow, wire up the RPCs, the glue, make some database calls. You basically implement how you'd save some data. And because this is approaching stability, we just did a release candidate for the 1.0 API. I think, especially if you want to, you know, show people that you do in fact care about user privacy, that the time is now, because it's just possible now and it wasn't possible a year ago.
I was yesterday refreshing myself on the Bitcoin design guide and the particular PayJoin section or elements. And, you know, it's a bit above my pay grade, but what I so value about the Bitcoin design guide and the team, the group behind it, is the sort of classic approach to what is the objective that a particular user has and what are they trying to accomplish to achieve that objective. And I think it lays it out nicely. I'll be sure to include that. But my understanding is that it is uninvasive. And as you say, part of the payment flow, as opposed to some of these other approaches, which I think have interjected a lot of friction, which we do not need. Clearly. And I think we're already in a situation where we're sort of chasing a lot of neobanks, a lot of consumer payments apps. And the more privacy we can enjoy, the less friction that it injects into the process, the better, which is great. Okay, so with that, let's get into a bit of the details, Dan, and I'll see if we can sort of keep this a little higher level with regard to the mechanics of PayJoin. And I think, you know, my objective would be for someone who is privacy curious, who is Bitcoin curious and or holding Bitcoin and wants to understand what is this magic that you have created, you and the team have created behind the scenes. Let's get into a bit of the details. So most privacy tools, I think, make us choose between convenience and anonymity. PayJoin, which, as I've noted, I think what's so powerful is it saves you money on fees while improving privacy. Could you walk us through sort of the Lego brick version of how that works?
Sure.
You've touched on it, but I'll just ask you to sort of go back and walk through.
Yeah. If anything gets too deep in the weeds, reel me in for a minute.
I'll pull you out. Yeah.
Yeah. So Bitcoin has inputs and outputs. You know, you have coins. Anytime someone pays you, you get a coin. And if you want to pay someone a certain value, you need to supply sufficient inputs to cover all of the output values you want to pay. So it's kind of like dollar bills, right? If you wanted to pay someone $7 and you had a 10, you would use that 10 and give them a 5 and 2 ones, and you'd make change of $3. Now, we don't need these denominations strictly, but another example, if you needed to pay someone, say, $8 and you only had 2 fives, you need to spend all, like, the whole mm-hmm. input. So typically when you'd make a transaction, like I say, you use one input and you'd get an output and change. With PayJoin, rather than just broadcasting that to the other person, when they give you their address, the information they share includes a mailbox, which is an out-of-band, just like your email, a place to put a message that they listen for. So instead of broadcasting that transaction to them, you put it in the mailbox and they're waiting for it. They can take that, add their own input and output. So if they added some input and still wanted to be paid to the same address, they then just augment the output by the amount of their input. Take that same transaction, put it back in the mailbox for you as the sender to take out, and then you can check this as the sender. Verify that it pays only the amount you wish to go to the receiver and gives you sufficient change. Sign it and broadcast it. And once you broadcast it, the receiver can see that, oh, this is what I, yeah, they get paid. And if for some reason after putting it back in the mailbox, the receiver doesn't see that on the network, they always have that original that they got in their mailbox that they can broadcast to fall back on. So the interaction, the ability of the sender and the receiver to send messages to one another, gives the receiver the chance to augment the original transaction with some more transaction intents, whether that's a consolidation, as I described, them mm-hmm. including their own inputs and adding it to their outputs, or even forwarding money to another person. So instead of taking the output directly, they could replace the output that would pay them with outputs that pay other people. That's the high level.
Nice. And then what was the fundamental breakthrough that made PayJoin possible?
Or was this the
grind over years to get this implemented?
Yeah, I don't know that there was one fundamental breakthrough. It's a little history. In 2018, there was a workshop in London that was Chatham House Rules. A bunch of people came together. I think the idea was called Pay to Endpoint then.
Yes.
Because even in Greg Maxwell's original CoinJoin Bitcoin talk post, which is, I think, from 2013, where equal output CoinJoin is spoken of, like putting payment amounts was listed there. And so when these folks got together in London, Blockstream wrote an article called Pay to Endpoint that described how this might work. You could use a web endpoint to do communication out of band and combine transactions, preserving privacy, because these transactions could have multiple interpretations. Like I said, they don't really look like pay joins. I think Adam Gibson dubbed the name PayJoin to the idea instead of pay to endpoint, P to EP, which rolls off the tongue a little nicer.
Absolutely. Much better marketing.
Yeah. Mr. Cooks and Nicolas Dorier from BTC Pay put together BIP78, which was a simple PayJoin protocol that used HTTP. That was implemented quite widely, actually, in BTC Pay server, of course. Sparrow, Wasabi, Join Market. But the issue was you had to run a server.
Yes.
And not everyone wants to run a server. And even if people do run servers, do they want to connect a hot wallet to it? There was just a lot of barriers to adoption that even were called out on the mailing list. Craig Ra wrote on the mailing list and he's like, yeah, this server thing is kind of stinky. Join Market fixes it by using Tor, but then even though all these wallets can send pay joins, if they don't have Tor, they can't communicate with the joiner. So there was this whole fragmented situation.
Low ceiling to the adoption curve, I think.
So this is around 2021, I'd say. After between 2018, 2019, the spec got made. It got rolled out to quite a few wallets where people did hand-rolled implementations, and it didn't really take off because it was hard to receive. It was really easy to write the sender, but not the receiver, because you needed to have the server and it needed to interact with the wallet. So around 2022, I had noticed I'd been working on equal amount coin joins in iOS, but I realized after some time that the operating system doesn't matter. We're not going to solve Bitcoin's privacy by taking these manual steps. And the PayJoin idea had gotten some attention. It seemed like people got the idea. People liked it. Armin Saburi and I, he still works on PayJoin. We won MIT Bitcoin Hackathon hacking PayJoin into the iOS wallet we were working on. And HRF gave us a little grant to productionize it. And that's when I really shifted focus. I'm like, okay, there's something here. Worked on the PayJoin dev kit, which was a library instead. Like, how do we ship this thing as a library instead of a specific application? And in doing that and doing the integrations, I realized that the protocol itself was the problem. So it's over the past 2 years, we've been working on an async PayJoin protocol that instead of requiring the receiver to run a server, both the sender and the receiver communicate using these mailboxes that are blinded. The messages are blinded from the server hosting the mailboxes, and the server hosting the mailboxes is called the directory, is run by a third party. And because of this, now you can take the PayJoin dev kit off the shelf, which is more or less an HTTP client, like a web browser client, and some crypto sprinkled on top with partially signed Bitcoin transactions, so some transaction serialization. And with this pure client software, any wallet can speak PayJoin and slip it into their experience. So the real breakthrough was this async PayJoin protocol and the ability to use that with an off-the-shelf dev kit. So the dev kit is all highly tested, performant, written in Rust. It's systems oriented. We've got the abstraction set up so they're very easy to reason about. Someone can come in and contribute however they want. And then we bind to that in all these different languages. So if your wallet's in Dart or Python or Kotlin or C Sharp, you can call this core library and know that your implementation is going to be interoperable. So this confluence of factors, I would say mainly the async protocol that Yuval Cogman and I co-authored, BIP77, are the reason that we've been able to go from this thing that was sort of fragmented and difficult to use to something that is now in Cake Wallet and Bull Bitcoin Mobile. You know, half a million monthly active users approximately can just scan a QR code and it'll happen in the background.
Brilliant. And so on the back of 7 years of grinding, here is a, you know, and I know you're a humble guy, but here is a significant breakthrough that Fast Forward gives us the ability, if you are a developer, if you're a builder, if you're a product person, to drop PayJoin into your consumer experience and off you go.
That's right.
And you said, Dan, I believe that you've compared PayJoin adoption to HTTPS.
Yeah.
And most of us, you know, we take that little lock in our browser for granted. So again, for those who may be coming sort of up that curve, why is that the apt analogy? And then what does that network effect curve look like as a result?
I'm glad you asked both of these questions because they're exactly why I frame it as HTTPS. So the reason HTTPS makes sense as an analogy is because before HTTPS, everything on the web was totally unencrypted. And if you and I were having this video call and I was on hotel Wi-Fi, the hotel is a sort of third party in the middle that would be able to listen in on the stream and find all the packets. Mm-hmm. Once we introduced HTTPS, not that streaming was that easy back in the day, maybe it was emails instead, but assume it was. Once we assumed HTTPS, then the ability of the third parties that are not us, the counterparties, to read that information was fixed. It was protected by encryption. PayJoin is much the same in that when I'm sending you some money with a PayJoin, you still know my inputs and I still know your address ultimately at the end of the transaction on chain. But without that information of my wallet or your wallet, without those additional details, the second party information, third parties don't know that with any certainty. The reason the network effects can take off as well is because HTTPS became seamless and embedded in the browser. Any browser has this now. I think this year, Chrome is going to release an update where if you go to an HTTP website, it's going to give you a big warning. It's not for an invalid certificate, just if the thing doesn't have a certificate at all. It's going to say, do you really want to even go to this website? We've come so far, in large part thanks to Let's Encrypt making certificates free.
Yes.
You can start up a server. Yeah. And that was a very similar model as well. That's a nonprofit, the Internet Security Research Group, supported by all sorts of, the browsers and EFF. And they were able to roll out this software that automated HTTPS so that it's expected everywhere. PayJoin's much the same.
Absolutely.
We've got the nonprofit. We've got the development kit. You can include it in your wallet with a couple weekends. You can make with a couple engineers in a weekend's time, you can make a proof of concept. And the last reason to call it HTTPS is because it contrasts with something like Tor. So this is beyond your initial questions, but Tor gives you second party privacy. So you connect to some website and that website doesn't know your origin IP address, even though you connect to them directly. So true, the third party can't see the traffic because
all
of
parties
HTTPS.
Are blind to the origin.
Yes, but the Tor protocol, onion routing, protects the IP address. And I know PayJoin can go that direction in the future, but what we've shipped right now is the closest to HTTPS.
Yes. And I think, you know, the thing again that I would like to underscore is this is not nefarious. This is, would you visit a website where the lock is open on your browser? Of course you wouldn't. Would you engage with a bank that didn't implement HTTPS SSL? Of course you wouldn't.
Can you imagine?
No. Yeah. I mean, so I love that. And I think it is, dare I say, appropriate and powerful to make that comparison, because that is what should be, is that same level of protection from snooping and from invasions of privacy. So Bull Bitcoin, Cake Wallet, I believe Foundation Devices. Is that a...
They've got a PR. They probably... the device itself will sign a PayJoin. I don't know if it works with either of those two pieces of software. You might be able to sign a PayJoin with like a Sparrow from that, the old protocol. But yeah, yes, it would work. The protocol is backwards compatible. So there's that.
Nice.
Like I said, Wasabi, Sparrow, Join Market, a BitMask wallet, and BTC Pay, of course. Cake and Bull Bitcoin have the new protocol. That's why I bring them up.
Yeah. I installed the Bull Bitcoin app last week. Brilliant. And so, you know, you're getting real adoption. This is not an academic paper. This is not a white paper. This is not aspirational. It's real. And so, you know, what then would be, and you've touched on this, we talked about sort of to a developer, if we shift a bit, Dan, to a CFO, COO of an exchange, what is the message to them as to how they should, it's a reiteration of what you said, how they should perceive PayJoin and what's in it for them, not as a dev, an engineer, a product person, but as sort of CFO, COO? What's the message to them?
The biggest reason for someone in such a position to use PayJoin is just that they can raise their bottom line. They can save on fees. We've got an example on our website of a 16% fee savings, pretty modest with some basic batching. And this is assuming you're already doing some batching.
Right.
That's the main thing. I often get asked in terms of the compliance department, like, what do I do about this? Won't people not like this?
I wasn't going to go there, but by all means, go there.
Yeah, no, I'd like to go there. I think it's related because it always comes up as the next question. And the thing is, there's nothing preventing. It's an independent problem because these KYC measures, if you're obligated to do them, are data collection with regard to like who you're dealing with, and nothing prevents you from collecting that information. Sure. So when I'm talking to someone in a CFO position, this is naturally going to come up. The bottom line can increase. You can save on fees. You basically take your batching strategy to the next level. And you also can get higher velocity of money because you can do something like cut through. Mm. So if you're an exchange, as this example, your depositors can directly fund your withdrawals. So you don't have to take the deposit, wait for confirmation, and then spend that UTXO. You can actually spend it in the same block with PayJoin.
Interesting. Okay. Right. So you don't have that carrying cost. And what is that? You know, you touched on it. I won't say this is your perspective or your position, but having had many of those conversations myself, I know that some, hopefully more and more over time, of these forward-thinking executives are looking at how to reduce the exposure that they carry to keeping so much personal data. Is there a scenario in which, as you said, you know, if they're obligated, they'll do it because nobody wants to get perp walked out the front door, and that's a different conversation than we're having today as to KYC and FinCEN and travel rule and all this stuff. But, you know, is there a benefit to sort of shrinking that attack surface if you're that head of compliance, if one implements PayJoin? Are you sitting on less data?
The reason I hesitate to answer is because as PayJoin is implemented today, the current protocol, it's actually about the same amount of data. You still know who your counterparty is, what funds were sent to you and what address was used. The biggest difference is that even if you give that information to a third party for analysis, the ability of the analysis is greatly reduced. Now, beyond that, I can imagine a future where an upgraded protocol has more effective batching, where as the recipient to a transaction, you don't necessarily know which coins were sent to you, or as a sender, you don't necessarily know which address or addresses those funds ended up in. You just end up with a proof. This is would be very similar to Lightning, which, as far as I can tell, has proliferated and is possible to use within compliant regimes. So I think there's a future for that too. But to answer the question, right now with PayJoin, you actually don't even need to consider that question because you have the same information you've always had with on-chain Bitcoin.
And again, you know, worth pointing out, an exchange intermediated approach versus truly peer-to-peer. Appreciating that those are quite different. So if we, as you say, you know, fast forward, I'll just pick a number, 30% of transactions implement or use PayJoin. What happens to the surveillance model, Dan? Who will think of the chain analysis firms?
There are more problems that we need to address, actually. So yes, the common input heuristic might be gone, but we still have a lot of work ahead of us in terms of privacy. Every wallet tends to have a fingerprint. So there's things like end lock time, sequence number, the script you're using, amount correlations generally, timing analysis of when transactions are made, if you can figure out a pattern. So their PayJoin in its current form, common input heuristic, is not the end of the story. It does make the very most useful tool that chain analysis has obsolete, especially if with 30% penetration, you're taking almost a 50% flip every two input transaction on the interpretation.
And truth be told, I did arrive at that number on purpose. So, right.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it's also difficult to measure. Like, how do you even know how many transactions and what volume is using PayJoin?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is itself wonderful. So, you know, I think the takeaway that I wanted to pull out, and of course you nailed it, is it's a great start, but there's a lot more work to do. And in that vein, does PayJoin lay a foundation for doing some or more of what you've just laid out, sort of breaking some of these common heuristics? Or is that the domain of a different BIP, a different set of technologies?
I would say both. Like, I would probably still call some of this stuff PayJoin, but it will require new specs and new tech.
Mm-hmm.
The cool thing about PayJoin DevKit is we deliver this off-the-shelf package with all the goodies you want, and we can have some, what I like to call, chain surveil-yourself tools to do analysis within your wallet and inform your transaction construction. So you can get some counterfactuals. You can figure out what the privacy effects of your wallet would be just by using the software that's being developed in the dev kit. And the next big protocol change that'll happen over the next a year or so for PayJoin is a multi-party PayJoin. So like I said, when you involve more than two people in a PayJoin, then there can be some real indistinguishability from the counterparty. So I pay you and I don't know what address you necessarily had. It's more interactive. You have to send more messages around. Anytime you have a distributed system, it becomes more complicated. But the team we have focused on this is built to people who have been thinking of this problem for a decade plus, and this problem has only been around for how long has Bitcoin been around? 17 years?
Yeah, right.
So there are ways to overcome these challenges, and then especially combined with some of the analysis that I see being brought into the clients and not just being done by surveillance firms in a defensive way, we will have very robust privacy for normal, everyday people on Bitcoin very soon.
Fantastic. That's the bullish sentiment I was hoping for. If we zoom out a bit, Dan, and we touched on the Fourth Amendment, I'd like to talk a bit about the First and Code of Speech. We rewind to the 90s. Daniel Bernstein successfully argued that publishing encryption code for PGP was protected speech under the First Amendment. Again, you are not a lawyer, but the samurai prosecution seems to attack that precedent. Some are saying it's crypto cryptography, not cryptocurrency, sort of crypto wars 3.0. What's your read? And how well do you sleep at night, frankly, with regard to the ability to enjoy First Amendment protections as a publisher of software?
I sleep okay with regard to that. The really screwed up part of that case was, again, the fact that the money transmission was tied in. That really doesn't make sense even for someone that's not just publishing software, but running software on a server, because that software didn't give them the ability to transmit the funds, to control and transmit the funds.
They did not have custody of funds.
No. So I'm glad to see what I think is progress in Congress on codifying the right to publish this kind of transaction and formally enjoy the protections. But it's just, until that happens, it is a bit uncertain what the behavior will be, especially the most concerning part of that case and the Roman Storm Tornado Cash case.
Yes.
Was that FinCEN came out with guidance in 2019. In my view, they did explicitly carve out anonymizing software providers, people that published and ran software but didn't have control of money. And then the judge, despite seeing this guidance, disagreed. And in the United States, judges decide matters of law, and the case was able to be brought forward. So until we get some greater precedent in the courts or law passed by Congress, it's a bit up in the air. It needs to play out.
Yeah. And in the meanwhile, without naming names, of course, any sort of insights or anecdotes in terms of what you're observing as to chilling effect among Bitcoin developers?
The biggest thing is that the CoinJoin coordinators are no longer run by white market companies. There are some gray market, pseudonymous, centralized, equal amount CoinJoin coordinators. I know a lot of people are avoiding the U.S. in terms of, a lot of foreign people are avoiding the U.S. in terms of travel. Mm-hmm. I think that's a vibe rather than based on reality, because at the same time we've seen, Phoenix come back to the U.S. There's just a lot of uncertainty.
But the momentum, it seems, I'm not seeing a slowdown with regard to product ship.
No.
No,
it's reinvigorated. I think the thing that's been beneficial in some ways is that the need for the actual privacy is here in force. I think before, when you had these companies that were making a profit on running CoinJoin coordinators, they didn't really need to provide privacy guarantees. They were the only game in town, and they made all these claims. Some of them continue to, the gray market stuff that's on the edges. And it was hard to, how do I put this? People didn't know any better, right? People didn't know any better. And I think we're seeing some of that analysis come out now, and people's focus is on things that will actually have more of a tangible benefit in terms of privacy, and some guarantees, some real protections.
So a bit of Streisand effect on private use of Bitcoin, in drawing attention to, well, I would like to think that, let's put it that way, that in hunting or chasing down, creating these witch hunts, that they're increasing awareness. But maybe that's my aspiration.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about.
I think there is.
Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I think there is some of that. I'm agreeing with what you're saying. There's a more momentum and motivation knowing that this problem really needs to be solved at a technological level, because
right.
the government process, even if it ends up doing the right thing, it just mm-hmm. takes so long and causes everyone so much pain in the interim that we need to have a technological solution to enforce it ultimately.
Yes. Yeah. As some of us have heard far too many times, the all important regulatory clarity, right? There's a parallel universe in which I'll speak for myself, wish that, we could simply transact in privacy and peace, but such is not the world. But in the meanwhile, the second to that is, okay, tell me what the rules are, right? Just so I know how to play the game. And as you say, that will be slow to arrive, but hopefully we're making progress. If we shift and to practical first steps, if I'm running a Bitcoin business, if I am a builder, a product person, you've touched on the PayJoin dev kit. How should I first approach thinking about privacy? And we've touched on this, so I'm asking you to reiterate. And what do I do next? You know, if I am merely accepting, if I'm an online retailer accepting Bitcoin for payments, if I'm a wallet developer, if I'm building something new and interesting, where should I start to understand privacy with regard to Bitcoin payments and PayJoin specifically, and what do I go do next? A fair question.
I would separate thinking about privacy with PayJoin, fortunately, because a lot of the design is that once, if you're a business doing e-commerce, accepting Bitcoin, by the time you know PayJoin is happening, it's been taken care of for you behind the scenes in software. Thinking about privacy in general, much like you would on the internet, is about thinking about what information you're revealing and who has it. So the first thing to do is to make sure that you're validating transactions yourself, ideally, or at a bare minimum, you really trust the person that is doing the validation for you, because they're seeing, if you're depending on a third party, the whole transaction history, as well as all the people you're transacting with, how much money you have on a normal basis, and you need to make sure that they're careful with that information. Ideally,
yeah,
you're running
why.
You're running a node or some light client software that allows you to sync privately. Beyond that, you want to be broadcasting your transactions in such a way that the whole world doesn't know they're yours. So using something like Tor or a relay. You don't want to be reusing addresses, because if you're giving, say, one address to a person to reuse, then it's trivial to cluster them all together. I think those are the real basic things for someone who's starting to take more of a privacy-conscious approach
right.
to Bitcoin to deal with. And then, just really consider what software you're using.
Sorry to interrupt, Dan, that was sort of what I should have clarified, is if I am that individual and I'm thinking of, so many that I've interacted with over the years in various roles who are operating businesses and accepting Bitcoin payments, it's not to say they're going to implement PayJoin, but really, why should they ask or even insist that their e-com point of sale, integrates PayJoin, which I think you've touched on the why.
Yeah, of course. Look at the reputation of the software vendor. What do other people that use Bitcoin think of them? That'll give you most of what you need. It's imperfect. It's harder it's easier than going and looking at GitHub issues and commit history.
Right.
But I think that'll give you a good start.
Absolutely. And then if you are a builder, what are sort of the first two or three steps that one takes to begin to build POCs or pilots with PayJoin? What does that look like? I know you've said it's quite straightforward, and I get that, but maybe what are those two or three steps they should take?
Definitely don't hesitate to reach out. If you go to payjoin.org, we've got a Discord. You can find me and ask me directly, and I will help you. Or you can send me an email, dan@patreon.org, and I will help you. But beyond that, if you go to pagejoin.org, we've got some documentation on what the protocol is. It links to the crate, which is approaching a release candidate. There's a reference implementation on Bitcoin Core that I've heard is invaluable when doing an implementation. So you can follow that as an example and plug in, and you ask some questions. You shouldn't have a terrible time of it. It should be pretty straightforward. You should maybe even have some fun.
Outstanding. Yeah. As Kali said on Nostra today, hey, if you want to stick around, be sure you're having fun. And then lastly, Dan, give us some spoilers, man. What does the next 6 to 12 months of PageJoin look like?
Oh, you're going to see rollouts. Yeah, you're going to see, we did proof of concepts at the MIT Bitcoin Expo Hackathon this past year for an integration with Bolts Exchange and Liana, and those have made some pretty significant progress. We've been keeping them off of our priority list, so we got the actual SDK stabilized, but now that it's stabilized, we're shifting into integrations mode again, so you're going to see that, and you're going to see some progress in this multi-party PageJoin protocol. There's even some PageJoin cross-input signature aggregation crossover. There's a lot more savings than you can get even with PageJoin if you combine these things, and you're familiar with cross-input signature aggregation.
I am, but I don't want to assume everyone is.
Yeah. So cross-input signature aggregation lets you combine all of the witness information in a transaction, all the signatures, into the size of a single signature in the full aggregation case that's been proposed. There's been some security proofs and some tangible algorithms published in a paper this year, Dalias. And the biggest question with full aggregation was, well, what protocol do we use to actually aggregate the signatures, to actually, because you need to interact, much like PageJoin, you need to communicate between the different people providing signatures if you're not doing it on your own. And because PageJoin already has this sort of interactive protocol, we can piggyback one on the other. And then that example that's on our website of a 16% fee savings versus Naive can turn into something like a 25% fee savings. You can get this massive incentive to use Bitcoin by default in a privacy-preserving way. So watch out for some explanations and fun pitches of that coming soon.
Incredible. And so, I mean, that clearly is the TLDR for anyone counting sats is up to, or no guarantees, but a potential saving of 25%.
Yeah. And this is just, this is a simple example of a relatively small transaction, honestly. I'm talking 4 inputs, 6 outputs. I think we can get significantly better than that, but I haven't done napkin math and tried to push the envelope. I'm just like, okay, yeah, what's a kind of simple example, and do some calcs on it.
And I mean, where else, and I'm, you know, thinking through this, where else do you get to increase or improve privacy and pay less for it? I don't know that I've got any examples that come to mind. So,
well, I think there are, honestly. I think a Lightning is a big one. It's hard to use in self-custody, but Lightning is basically a coin join. Like you're combining transfers from different people and settling later. And if you're using eCash, you're giving up custody, but you can have some potential privacy benefits. I mean, anytime you're using a custodian, assuming you trust that custodian completely with your privacy, you are getting fee scaling benefits. But the problem is you have to trust that custodian. It's very possible that they just say, oh, this information, I left that on a hard drive and we let the hackers get into it. Or even they have some program where they publish it and sell the information to someone else. So
absolutely.
Practically on Bitcoin, especially for on-chain wallets, there's nothing like PageJoin.
How could we wrap it up any better than that? Dan, really appreciate the time. Thanks so much. We'll stay tuned. I'll get all these links out for everyone to keep track of this fantastic progress, and we'll look for those announcements and all the wallets to get our hands on to use PageJoin.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Dan. Take care. We'll be right back.